I realized that I was at the top of my game in Boston, so I went to our sister radio station in New York, which was WXRK. That's where Howard Stern was.
Mm-hmm.
And I started going in there to do production, but I wasn't part of the Stern show. And then, you know, he knew who I was. I mean, because we worked for the same company. I actually worked at Infinity Broadcasting longer than he did. But he knew who I was, and the general manager at the time, Mel Karmazin, who became head of Viacom, and now he's head of Sirius Satellite Radio, brought me there, and he says, I'll try to get you, you know, involved with that show. I said, well, I really love it, you know, Stern. And, you know, he started calling me up on the phone, like, in the mornings, like, if he had an idea for a bit, and he would tell Gary Delabate. Call Billy West. We're going to do, you know, because Lucille Ball was dying in the hospital, and they were showing, you know, the grape stomping scenes on TV and the Bon Bon machine and the Metavita Vita Veggie mix, and, you know, showing her clips, which means she's on her way out. And so Howard was pretending to call the Cedars-Sinai to talk to Lucy, and he called my house. You know, so Gary calls me at 7 in the morning. He goes, Howard wants you to do a bit with him. He's going to call you as Lucy. You're going to be Lucy. Okay. So I had an idea, and he goes, Robin's reading the story on the air. Well, America's favorite redhead comedian. He goes, Sinbad? No, Howard. Lucille Ball. Oh, Lucy. Poor Lucy. And then he says, in the middle of the story, he goes, wait a minute, Gary, we can call her, right? You get the number of Cedars-Sinai? Yeah, we can call her. We get the number. She goes, no, you're kidding, Robin. And so Gary comes in and pretends like he's got the number, and they call the Cedars-Sinai, and the phone rings at my house, and I go, Cedars-Sinai. he goes, hi, I'm looking for Lucy. Which Lucy? What brand of Lucy? You know. and he goes, you know, Lucille Ball, the comedian. And he goes, hang on. So they get transfers it. I'm pretending I'm transferring it. And then I answer the phone. And you hear on the phone, hello? And Howard goes, Lucy, is that you? Yes. Well, this is Howard Stern. And why are you bothering me? You know, like she's all cranky because she's going to die. And the bit was so dark and everything, but it titillated us. And I was saying, God, you know, we're the country that invented the space shuttle jokes. You know what I mean? There's something that you let off steam about in your nervousness, laughter about dying, which Americans do. They turn it into some kind of humor to relieve the horrible fear that we all have. And it's really particular to us. I mean, I don't think there's other forms of humor that, like from other countries and stuff, that has, like, you know, disaster jokes the day after it happens. So we went on and on and on. And then he started, like, calling me a whole lot more, and I was doing all these characters in the morning. And then he started to invite me into the show. I still had a job at the radio station, but I was doing this mindless production work. And, you know, with the stupid program director I hated, who was just like, you know, he just had no scope, no vision, no nothing. You know, he's like an automaton. And then I became a guy on the show for 3 days a week. It was not full time because I had gotten the roles to two Nickelodeon series at that time. One was Doug, who was a painfully average 11-and-a-half-year-old boy. And my dog Porkchop. And my girlfriend, Patty Mayonnaise. And, oh, yeah, give me that microphone, loser. This is Roger Klotz, king of the world. You hear me? Get lost, loser. and then Ren and Stimpy.
Right.
Hey, Ren, will you button me? Will you shut up, you fool? Yes, I shall kill you. And, you know, and then I was going to the Stern show, and I realized, you know what, I got to get out of here. I'm like, I'm becoming a cult hero, and I'm still punching into a job and taking orders from a guy with a tie in management. I said, I didn't get into show business so I could have that. And so I left, and I came out to Los Angeles, and I had no series. I mean, everything had ended a year earlier for me. This was in 95 I came out here. And I took my chances, you know. I lived in, like, a rent by day, by week, whatever, corporate apartment that's furnished, you know. And I got an agent, and I was doing all kinds of auditions, and I got the movie Space Jam as Bugs Bunny.
Right.
And my co-star was Michael Jordan, of course. I don't know if anybody knows that.
Who's he?
And I did Elmer Fudd in that movie, too. And I had that gig for like 10 years, but while I was doing that, I wound up doing like 10 different series all of a sudden. So I was banging into myself, coming and going.
What series did you do?
A lot of it included like Woody Woodpecker and Hysteria, Project Geeker. Gosh, there was just so many of them. I'd have to look up on the database to remember what it was. And then Futurama came about.
Right. You did many voices on that show.
Well, Matt Groening was a fan, which I had no idea. I mean, I had no idea. He called me into those auditions. And he said, I'm a fan. And I go, well, I sort of know who you are, too. And I remember auditioning for Bender, the robot, and I don't know, remember what I did. And then I auditioned for The Professor and Dr. Zoidberg.
Right.
And Zap Brannigan came later. But they loved The Professor and Dr. Zoidberg. They had already
cast
Fry and Leela, but it wasn't Katie Sagal. And then there was a lot of revisions went on after that. And next thing you know, they're saying, can you do Fry? And I just, you know, I remember the original audition I did, which was basically me, my own voice, which is something I would never do. My own voice basically is a 25-year-old.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, it was like, I knew that if you could get a job doing your own voice, you'd be really hard to replace. Because if you're doing a character, there's something to latch on to mimic. But, like, if I tried to do your real voice, I wouldn't know where to begin. You know what I mean?
Oh, you mean my voice?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, because you don't have hooks built in. You don't have, like, you know, peaks and valleys all over the place. You're pretty even-keeled and, you know, and that's hard to latch on to. If someone has, like, affectations and stuff, that's easy to latch on to. But, you know, that's the way it goes. It's like that's the hardest voice to imitate is some real normal person's voice that's not a celebrity. And the next thing you know, I was doing Fry, Professor. Fry, 25-year-old pizza delivery boy. Man. All this constant exposure to radiation is making me thirsty.
And I did Dr. Zoidberg, the crustacean doctor, and go get me a sandwich from the dumpster.
A sandwich.
And leave the worms on it. and I did Zap Brannigan later on, the master of time, space, and all the future, and, winner of this year's Modesty Award, yeah. And Professor Hubert Farnsworth, the 147-year-old...
Wow. And, what was it like on Futurama?
What's that?
What was it like on Futurama, working with everybody?
It was beautiful. It was great. I mean, everybody had the same goal. Let's do the best we can. Let's, you know, I never saw any fighting or disruption or nothing. I mean, the most, the two most disruptive characters on the whole show were me and Johnny DiMaggio. You know, because we just couldn't stop laughing at each other. You know, he'd be doing a Bender take, and then he'd burst out screaming laughing over something I said to him 12 minutes earlier. So we were, you know, we were just trying to have fun. All we did was have fun, and everybody knuckled down and did their part. Part's great. They nailed them. For me, it was a joy to go breeze from one character to another because what they used to do was record you as one character through the whole thing, and then you record it as someone else, and then someone else, and they would edit it together. But I did them in real time. throughout the episodes. Yeah, Matt was great to work with. David X. Cohen was the director. I mean, he just knew exactly what he wanted, and he'd let you do your thing. And he trusted in the performers, you know, to bring what they have as skills to the table. And it was just beautiful fun, because the last experience I had had really was with, you know, like something that became a cult hit was Ren and Stimpy. And mm-hmm. that was a miserable experience. You know, it was horrifying. I mean, all I had to do all the time was scream and yell. I mean, I enjoyed the cartoon and everything, but, you know, being beaten to death by a director is not my cup of tea. Mm. And there was too much emotional baggage going on over there, you know, because the guy that created the show got fired after the first season and tried to get me to go along with him, you know, to nothing. And then attacked me for 10 years being like a rock in my shoe because I wouldn't side with him. And, you know, he thought that I had the clout to, like, bring him back on board if I quit. And it's like, no, that's a cowardice thing to do. That's not a man. That's, you know, that's using someone else to fight your own battles like a little... And so I liked the show very much, and I love the characters that I got to do. But the experience in and of itself was really... You know, kind of.
Stick around for the conclusion of our interview with Billy West. We'll be right back.